Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a game day in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Cody back in the saddle. Bink was in, of course, on Friday.
Our
Taylor Swift expert, Jay Binkley. So it was perfect. We played a couple clips of the songs, got his nice reaction to each everyone. He really enjoyed
what
us doing
What was his favorite
that.
Track?
He did not have a favorite. He hated all of them.
Jeez, Bink.
Yeah, people were very upset that we spent 35 seconds every hour talking about it, so...
I mean, it is a pretty big album release, and like at least one of the songs is definitively about Travis Kelce, yeah. And I would argue a bunch.
Yeah, we played Wood for Bank. Yep, we did. We definitely did. I figured you were gone just having a watch party, a listening party at home
Lit
with you
candle,
and your wife and
put
everything.
Put on some orange.
Yeah, I figured.
Sat in the living room and soaked it all in, yeah. You know? Took in the whole album, track by track.
Yeah, I figured that was why you were gone,
yeah.
You know, and everything.
Yeah, people
were wondering. People were wondering. I said, yeah, he was wanting to just, you know, embrace the entire album release. Then he went to Chapel Roan that night. It was just a big weekend for Cody.
I mean, I probably would have gone to Chapel Roan. I did not have tickets to that.
Yeah. The photos look cool, I will say.
It did. From
just because the setting was at the Liberty Memorial. It was very cool.
Yeah, and they were pop-up concerts. So yeah. There weren't a bunch all over, really. This was the only one in the Midwest area. So, no, this is the funniest part about having a job like this is... People get to, you know, you're gone and they're like, but
what happens? Why is he gone?
And if you aren't like gone for a specific reason, it's a mystery reason.
And that's
it. Nobody knows.
We'll leave it as a mystery. We will. You guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running. Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows. Every once in a while, we get these rare game day shows. They're kind of fun.
Ooh.
You know, we've had them over the years because of the Thursday night openers and things like that. But Monday night football, it's not the first time. I enjoy when we get to do the show on a game day and then knowing that, you know, you get to a Tuesday and it's reaction. The week goes by way quicker. I don't know about you guys. And so I enjoy the Monday night football. I know it's tough for some people, right? You got to get to bed early enough.
Kids got to go to school.
Tomorrow, like if they win, you got energy. If they lose tomorrow, everybody's dragging. I get it. That's how this works. Typically. We're going to talk all about Jacksonville and Kansas City. We'll also sprinkle in plenty of NFL from yesterday because it was a chaotic day. In the NFL. I mean,
shaping up to be one of the worst slates of noon and 3 o'clock games I've ever watched. And at least some insane, nonsensical comeback saved it.
Yes.
Plus a great Sunday night football game.
Yeah, it really was. And Thursday night game was good as well. So it's been an interesting week. But let's start with some surprising news yesterday. Now, it sounds like it's going to be all right. But we were in our group chat yesterday. And all of a sudden, the report from Adam Schefter and the Chiefs on their own injury report that Xavier Worthy has an ankle problem. This is the latest from Ian Rappaport.
The Kansas City Chiefs had a little sort of injury scare, I would say, yesterday. Xavier Worthy popped up on the injury report with an ankle along with his shoulder. My understanding is kind of just turned his ankle a little bit, woke up swollen. They put it on the report. He is fine. He is expected to go more of a precaution than anything else. Worthy has been excellent since he returned, playing with that torn labrum. And then Trayvon Walker, the Jacksonville Jaguars star edge, former number one overall pick, 2 sacks as far this season. He actually had wrist surgery this week. Still, this is questionable. Feels to me like a long shot for him to be able to be out there. They want to leave it up to him how he feels tonight, but certainly seems like more likely than not, Walker will be watching his first game post-surgery.
I mean, talk about Trayvon Walker in just a bit. Obviously, it doesn't sound like he's going to play. The beginning part, though, good news if you were worried when you saw Xavier Worthy pop up with an ankle injury. It sounds like it truly is just a precautionary thing. It was Ian Rappaport there. Cameron Wolf yesterday had a similar report. So I fully expect Xavier Worthy to play tonight. I know it's possibly going to be rainy and stuff, and so you worry about, you know, an ankle injury that's already bugging you. But it sounds like, hey, you're required to report something, and he got off a plane, and the ankle was swollen, something they didn't think was a big deal. And then, I mean, you get to altitude, and sometimes that can cause it to be swell up when you land, by the time you land.
I don't think it's anything major yet, but I will say, I do kind of hate any kind of injury lingering gold, because we already knew the fear of the shoulder, right? That's been a thing that's always going to exist, and we always have to fear. And I'm still hoping we get at least one game of every wide receiver being healthy for the Chiefs at the same time. As in Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Rashee Rice on a football field together. We have to get through two more weeks even to potentially get that view of the offense and what their maximum level is. So I don't like it popping up. It does sound like he's going to play. Most reports indicate he's going to play. So I'm not going to over panic about an ankle that swole up a little bit. This kind of stuff happens. But also, like, you see, like, Bucky Irving, who had a different secret injury he wasn't even telling his team about. They hold him out for the ankle injury. He's like, oh, by the way, my shoulder's been bothering me. And you're like, what happened? And you're like, I probably dislocated. It's fine, I'm sure. And you're like, whoa, back up a little bit there, Bucky. What happened on your shoulder? And why weren't you telling us before? Players want to be on the field. And Xavier Worthy, especially against a defense that's been playing as well as the Jags, he's an important player. We saw how important a player
he was. Oh, no doubt. I don't think anybody...
Against the Ravens defense. Although the Ravens defense is...
Terrible? Yes.
Terrible. We'll talk about them
that's
in a minute.
Exactly what they are. But no, bad. You're right. I mean, players, of course, want to do whatever they can to be in the field. I think it was Xavier Worthy after the game last week. He was at the podium, and he was asked just about how tough it was not being out there. And he said... I think he even said going back to high school or something, like he doesn't miss games. Like it's not something he does in his career. I understand the size element. You would think that he's hurt all the time, but he's not. He either plays through it or he doesn't get hurt. So I fully expect him to play tonight now that there's multiple match reports saying so as well. And just based off of the track record, and this seems like, even though it's listed as he's listed as questionable ankle and shoulder, this seems like it's more about the ankle than it is that something went wrong with the shoulder during practice or something, which means I think it'll be all right. The only concern at all would just be, we know so much of his game is about speed. And so if the ankle, does it limit you there? And then if the field is sloppy, then, you know, do you risk that? That would be the only reason why I'd be a little more concerned about that. But for the Chiefs, and we'll talk more about kind of the keys to the game and everything, we'll take your texts on it as well. Yes, Xavier Worthy, knowing that you still don't have Rashee Rice, he changes everything, and they absolutely need him on the field tonight to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. Meanwhile, last night, you mentioned it was a great game. I don't think a lot of people thought it would be a great game. The Bills were, what, 8.5-point underdogs
really
on the road.
Really sloppy first quarter.
It was a very sloppy. It reminded me of the first half of the Chiefs-Giants game, from that Monday night game or whatever.
Nobody
it was.
Nobody wants to win it. Here, you have the ball. No, you have it.
Yeah, or Sunday night game, I guess it was. Yeah, the Giants. It reminded me of that. We're turnover city, neither team playing well, but also you're letting the team hang around that's not as good as you. The Chiefs ultimately figured it out in the second half against the Giants. The Bills got going offensive a little bit, but their defense is a problem. Their defense cannot stop the run. And we saw Drake May on a national stage grow up a little bit before our eyes. I'm not suddenly saying that Drake May is going to be a top five or top 10 quarterback just like that. But that performance makes you think that, okay, the Patriots maybe can push the Bills a little bit more. And the Bills defense is what we thought, very vulnerable. And the Chiefs still get the Bills here, as we know, coming up in a couple of weeks. This was one nobody expected the Bills to lose. And it's something to watch. I still think the path is very nice for the Bills to get the one seed. Someone texted in, because you guys know we had the conversation a few weeks ago, and said, you ready to talk about the one seed yet, Gold? Buffalo is gettable. Well, I think there's no dominant team in the AFC. I think that's very clear. I wouldn't disagree with that. I still think their path to the one seed is better than anybody else's. And last night does not change that for me. But there is a chance that we wake up tomorrow, not only are the Chiefs tied atop their own division, but the Chiefs are suddenly a game back of the Bills, and they have a head-to-head. So I'll give you that. I mean, it's everything that happened yesterday was good for the Chiefs, no doubt.
Pretty much everything happened in the league. Chargers go down. Broncos, they won, but also they took down the Eagles, so that one was kind of a wash. But then, of course, last night, look, what's funny about this game is I would just tend to not overreact in any conceivable way as it relates to the Bills. The Bills lost a divisional game. Divisional games are supposed to be tough. And Josh Allen is still one of the top four quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, I'm not getting the argument over 2, 3, 4, but he is one of the better players in the league. Most people probably have him too. Last night, what stood out about it is Drake May was making the Josh Allen plays. that throw 30 yards down the sideline, that sick throw that like right near the goal line, that one, the final one to Stephon Diggs.
How about Stephon Diggs last night, huh?
As he's stiff arming a defender, flipping that ball out. I honestly think if he gets sacked there, game over. Instead, he gets a first down. They go down and win the game. And Stephon Diggs, yeah, had a massive game for them. I just thought in a single game, which can happen to Mahomes or anybody else, Drake May made the Josh Allen throws. He made all the plays, especially late in the game when he just kept coming up with big play after big play after big play and eventually leading him down the field for the game-winning drive. It does make me, like, I can't decide on the Bills because unlike the Eagles, the Bills to me have looked good. But the problem is, like, they did almost lose to that Ravens squad in week one. And now the Ravens, even with Lamar Jackson, have some massive offensive issues. The Bills' defense is a little more suspect than it's been in a few years.
Rush defense in particular.
Yeah, and so, like, that part of it I can't quite figure out. What it's starting to feel like is the AFC doesn't have just, like, a runaway team yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's partially because the Chiefs have played poorly, partially because the Bills have looked human, and everyone else is stuck in a complete wash. Like we saw this morning, the Ravens are technically still favored to win the AFC North.
They are.
Which is insane.
They're still like plus 110, and the Steelers are plus 140. I think that's more about lack of trust and belief in a 42-year-old quarterback and the Pittsburgh Steelers than it is necessarily like still thinking that the Ravens will figure it out. It is bizarre. I was surprised to see that. I think, though, the Buffalo Bills and the Chiefs and the Ravens, as we know, for the last 5 years, really, have always been the three teams we talked about as being the dominant AFC West teams.
Yeah, and one still, of them usually is having the year.
And I still think when the dust settles at the end, the Chiefs and Bills will be there. But I agree with you that it's right now atop the AFC teams we're not used to seeing. Like, nobody's fully buying the Colts yet. You can say you are starting to because Daniel Jones is playing great. That's fine. And I am starting to. But nobody's putting the Colts in that same category. Maybe that'll be a mistake and maybe we should. We'll find out.
The most dominant of those three.
But the Colts right now in the AFC, the Colts and the Bills are kind of the top teams. And the Chiefs have a chance, I think, if they were to look impressive tonight against Jacksonville, to immediately vault themselves back up even the national conversation in that same realm. But when you have teams like the Colts that are now in the convo, it doesn't feel right, I guess, for the national narrative and for what we're used to. So it makes the AFC seem way weaker than what it has been. But yeah, I don't think, you know, the runaway thing is going to happen necessarily. I disagree. Someone says Bills lost a division game, making the road game even harder. You mean the road for the one seed? No, it doesn't, because they're going to win their division. Like, nobody, the Patriots are not winning that division. So the one seed, either
not
team,
in my mind, no.
Like it's whether or not, does it bring them back to the pack that you think before the Chiefs had to get to, you know, the Bills were going to be a 14-win team. Now maybe you think they're a 13-win team. Well, can the Chiefs get to 13? Maybe. To me, there was no way the Chiefs were getting to 14. That's where I think the calculus has changed a little bit for the number one seed convo. If you want to say that the path is open more because it's not going to take 14 wins anymore, I'll listen to that
because
argument.
Because of one close divisional game like on Sunday Night Football, that feels like
that's what I'm saying. I'm not
overreaction.
I still, right now, if I had to make a bet on who the number one seed is, I would still make it on the Buffalo Bills. So, I don't know where you would
even
as well.
More than the, I guess maybe I'd want to look at the Colts schedule, but come on. There's still part of you in the deepest, dark part of your brain that you're like, the Colts? The Colts are going to win 13 or 14 games. If you look at their schedule, Cardinals this weekend at home, then they have the Chargers on the road, Titans at home, Steelers on the road, Falcons. That's not like a murderer's row.
Also,
schedule.
That Chiefs-Colts game on November 23rd actually seems like pretty special, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially
if you're talking about one we thought was going to be a pushover.
Well, and another thing that's good for the Chiefs, if for some reason the market bears out that it's the Colts who are the real threat for the number one seed, well, good news is for you, you'll have Indianapolis on your schedule just the same. There's still part of me, and they're rolling some teams right now, so obviously they've got a chance of doing it. It just doesn't feel like there's some absolute force to be reckoned with in the AFC just yet. And yeah, some of that is because the game last night. I will say, I came away more than I was like, oh, what happened to the Bills? Where I thought Josh Allen played a bad game. They gave the ball away a bunch of times. One of his less good games overall, right? I more came away with, boy, Drake May in an absolutely pivotal game for them came through in a couple of big spots. And I still don't think they have an overwhelming offensive unit. Like, I don't think they're just like
they're
flush
limited
with
still.
Weapons.
They're limited
still. But that makes it more impressive for me.
Well, Mike Vrabel's a hell of a coach.
I mean, he's got his team winning.
Mike Vrabel's a hell of a coach.
That team looks significantly more organized. They look like a better team. Vrabel's much, much better than they were running out there last year. No doubt about it.
And I know Stephon Diggs is the one who requested the trade out of Buffalo a couple years ago, but still, that was a revenge. You could tell throughout the game how much they were showing him, too, on the sideline. He wanted to beat his old team so badly, and he backed it up. Stephon Diggs had an unbelievable performance. It's back-to-back weeks where he has 100 yards. That's also been the difference for the Patriots. If all of a sudden Stephon Diggs post-ACL injury can be anywhere near this level of performance, even if it's 70% of what they're getting in the last 2 weeks, then that's a game changer for that Patriots offense. They just got to find a way for their running backs not to fumble the football. Between Ramondre Stevenson, Antonio Gibson, who maybe suffered a serious knee injury and won't be back.
That didn't look good.
But they got the rookie in Travion Henderson, who's impressive. To me, they should be giving him the ball more, given the fumbling problems that Ramondre Stevenson has had.
They were talking about it on the broadcast. You can't ignore it forever. Yeah. Andy doesn't let it. Ramondre's not, he's not Saquon Barkley. If all of a sudden one random, or Derrick Henry, right? If Derrick Henry starts having some fumbling issues, you're not going away from Derrick Henry.
Sure.
You took Travion. You took a relatively high draft pick at running back. And if it's not going to work because the guy's giving the ball away, because I thought so many times I thought the Patriots were going to lose that game. I thought it was a huge mistake by Vrabel to kick 3 points from the 1 yard line with 1 second to go in the second half. I think on the road against Buffalo,
go for it.
That is a go. That is a go for a touchdown. Go every time for me. And I understand he kicked a field goal. They still won. That is a go. But when they got the first turnover and then gave it right back to Buffalo, all of those, I'm like, ugh.
They outplayed Buffalo. Yeah, they outplayed Buffalo in that environment as well. That was a very, very impressive win for the New England Patriots. Tonight, you got Jacksonville, who I think is trying to show people they belong in the conversation in the AFC as well tonight. It's not a playoff game, so let's not act like this is bigger than when they came back and beat the Chargers in the playoffs, or it's bigger than, you know, I guess, has it been 8 years now or whatever? I don't even know the exact timeline since Blake Bortles was in an AFC title game. Has it been a decade already? I don't know the exact timeline on it, but this is the biggest non-playoff game that the Jags have had in a long time. Yeah, it's only week five. You're saying, how can it be that big? Well, it's a Jags team that has a division that is up for grabs. The Texans don't look all that hot, even though they came off a win this past week. The Colts right now are in first place and look really, really good. But again, I don't think they are going to run away with that division. The Jags haven't played that great of football offensively, and yet they're in a position to potentially get to four wins after tonight. And they're going to do it against a team that was in the Super Bowl last year. It's the Chiefs, to me, are still that team that if you beat them, it sets the tone for the rest of the year and makes you believe. And so this is a huge game for Jacksonville for their entire season. I view it that way. Yeah, Kansas City, we all know what's at stake for the Chiefs. I just think for Jacksonville, as much as it's a prove-it game for the Chiefs offense, it's a prove-it game for Liam Cohen as a head coach in year one and a statement opportunity for them. Don't discount that if you're a fan in Jacksonville, you're trying to still knock off the Chiefs here. If you're Liam Cohen, you're trying to prove that, hey, no, this team has a real chance to win this division, to compete and be a playoff team this year. We can hang with the Chiefs. That's what's at stake for the Jags tonight.
It's hard because you always have to shake the idea of, I don't take this team serious because I'm used to them being bad. You know the truth? Jags have been bad for a while. They have been a joke of a franchise for some time, even after getting the number one overall selection with Trevor Lawrence. They still haven't mattered really at any one particular point. I know that they faced the Chiefs in one playoff game, that they came back and beat the Chargers, but we didn't take them even serious then during that time. They've been a laughingstock. It's not like Cleveland Browns, Raiders level bad. But if you go through their schedule right now, no one's going to take them, and no one's going to feel threatened by the Jags, and no one's going to walk into a game being like, boy, that defense can really get us. They've beaten the Panthers. They lost to Cincinnati, and that was with Jake Browning starting, I don't know, three quarters of that game. They beat the Texans, a team that until they faced the Baltimore defense, the only defense making everyone look good, they looked awful. And they beat the 49ers, which was admittedly their most impressive.
Very impressive
win of the
but
season.
They haven't played a quarterback anywhere near the level of Mahomes. To your really point, you're going through those quarterbacks.
Mac Jones, CJ Stroud, Jake Browning, and Bryce Young. Mm. So like they haven't had to go up against an elite level play caller, an elite level offensive quarterback yet in the league. And so I have a hard time shaking that part. I'll say, you have to take them seriously if they win this game tonight, even at home, because then they're 4-1. They're tied for the best record in the AFC. They've taken back-to-back what will end up being playoff teams this year in the 49ers and the Chiefs, and you will have a statement win to your name. The problem is it goes the other way for the Jags if they lose tonight. They lose tonight. Can they lose to Seattle at home next week?
Back-to-back games.
Can they lose to the Rams the week after that at home, Gold? They got three straight home games against Chiefs, Seattle, and the Rams. This is a three-game stretch where they can either put their name in the paper as a team to take serious or eliminate themselves from any serious competition. It's the same thing. The one part I'm really curious for tonight, Chiefs teams have been very good. And in some of the ways they can exploit Lawrence, which we'll talk about in a little bit. To this point, Liam Cohen appears to have his team playing better football, playing more organized football. Their defense has significantly improved. He's made Trevor Lawrence worse and Brian Thomas worse.
Trevor Lawrence worse. I disagree.
They have regressed.
Yeah.
Offensively. And I don't necessarily mean like permanently worse. I'm just saying to this point, they have been a worse offense under Liam Cohen than they were even last year. So at some point, it's like, it can't just be that they win. It's that they got to win and Trevor Lawrence has got to look like a salvageable starting quarterback.
The only way I think the Jags win tonight is Trevor Lawrence has his best game of the season. You guys agree with that? I mean, I know how they've been winning to this point, which is turning over their opponent. They're plus nine in turnover margin. We talked all last week about how opportunistic that unit has been on defense. And their formula, of course, is right now is that, and that's been good enough. I think tonight, a Chiefs team that, knock on wood, has not really turned the ball over all that much. If the Chiefs have a clean game in terms of that, I don't know how the Jags win unless Trevor Lawrence has his best game of the year. Now, he might. Like, it's capable. I find it hard to believe because this Chiefs defense has been their strength through the first 4 weeks of the season. Other than the Chargers game, they've been one of the best defensive units in all of football.
Yep.
I don't think suddenly they're going to stink. Now, Trevor Lawrence, it wouldn't surprise me on a Monday night football game and everything we're talking about in this buildup to this game, he probably will have his best game of the season. I think that is a bare minimum requirement, though, for the Jags to win this game tonight.
You're saying it'll go hand in hand. Trevor Lawrence and the offense will look more like a functional. They'll be serious because Trevor Lawrence will look good. It's just, I don't know, they've like quieted the offense down or dumbed it down. And it doesn't, like, to me, they're not weaponless. ETN's having a really good year. Brian Thomas, we both agree, is a stud. So, like,
the old complimentary football is what they're playing. That's basically what they're doing at this point in time there. And I don't know if that's good enough to beat the Chiefs tonight. In fact, I don't think it is at all to beat the Chiefs. 913-586-7965. Someone says, I expect the goalposts to move if KC beats the Jags. I'm assuming they mean on the national side. I agree with you.
Here.
Last week it was, hey, well, the Ravens just stink. And then we saw what the Ravens looked like yesterday. Their defense stinks. Tonight is a, and we're going to talk about it more, as you said, is a confirmation type of game, I think, for the Chiefs offense. In fact, they're good. But you might be right that, you know, the whether, you know, Travion Walker not playing and all, like, somebody out there will claim, well, we need to see it against the Lions. And then that kind of stuff will always happen. It'll drive you crazy if you let it, because that kind of stuff will continue to happen from national shows.
After tonight, though, we'll only be one game away from the return of Rashee Rice and the full complement of the offense.
Hey.
And then 6 weeks felt like a long time to be without your number one wide receiver. And after they get through the game tonight, especially if they win, they'll be 3-2 and with a chance to go 4-2. And look, the Lions are good. There's no doubt about that. They're a solid squad who hung, I don't know, nearly 40 or whatever it was on Cincinnati yesterday. So they're a kind of team you have to play your best game versus tonight. The Chiefs can play their medium level game and beat the Jags. It doesn't work that way against teams like the Lions. You have to play your best. Meanwhile, over the weekend, I thought it was worth noting because for the fans of the Royals who wanted blood, they got a little bit. The Royals fired a couple of assistant hitting coaches yesterday. Is that enough to, I feel like if you wanted Zoom walk on, that wasn't going to ever happen. And so now this is a little of like, we're not okay with the offensive results. We are wanting to look internally at some other options of guys who can do it. If you wanted a little blood and then this is not okay, now it's okay. At least they're doing something in my sense.
Well, it's not status quo, if that's what you mean. Yeah, it's not status quo. Moving on from two of their hitting coaches, Alex Zumwalt, clearly, I think it's very, very evident at this point in time, the relationships he has built with Bobby Witt Jr. and others is really, really important to them. To them, I mean, I'm talking about the players even.
Yeah.
As much as it is for J.J. Piccolo. And that is something they value quite a bit. And I think it's the biggest reason why he is still in charge of the hitting side of things for this organization at the big league level. And hopefully the other two individuals that they eventually bring in or other, I don't know if they'll bring in two, they're firing two, doesn't mean necessarily they'll bring in two, but whoever they bring in, will hopefully be able to work on the other side of that, not just relationships. And I'm not saying Alex Umwalt doesn't do that, but I think the biggest asset they view right now with Alex Umwalt is the relationships he has with the players, and maybe with the front office as well.
Vinny, Bobby, all those guys.
So, yes, we've talked about this all season long. I think there's definitely risk involved with not just overhauling the whole damn thing. I mean, if you were to go back to other staff changes in the past, they didn't just fire the assistants to Cal Eldred. They fired Cal Eldred, right? So this is a little different approach.
It's a half measure.
I hope it pays off for them. There's no question, though, if this team were to get off to a slow start offensively next year, there is no more of this, well, he just, you know, everybody likes some kind of thing and they got a great relationship kind of thing. It'll clearly be on one person. There will be no disputing that. And I understand, and I had Vern on during fan club on Friday, and he brought up good points. Like, yes, the players ultimately have to perform, and there has to be the player there for you to coach as well. Meaning last year, I mean, if you look through the lineup outside of Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, you know, what were you supposed to do with all due respect, hitting wise with a couple of the names that were around? You know,
yeah, the outfielders were never going
to
hit.
But it is also your job as the coach, though, to get the most out of said player. It's a
tough
balance.
And they got the least out of some of those guys.
I would argue that as well. So, yes, I knew when at the press conference last week they mentioned there were going to be some tweaks that it likely meant somebody was not going to be around in the hitting staff once we knew that Alex Umwalt was back. So it's more of a continued conversation when we get to spring training. But
hey, not the same voices. Yeah. Somebody else for Zumwalt to kick ideas around with.
We'll get back to some football. Don't forget, Monday's football coverage is presented by Busey Bank, where they're focused on your success. At Busey Bank, they've been building business and growing wealth since 1868. Learn more at buseybank.com. Up next, we got another update on the Mark Sanchez situation in Indianapolis, and one thing that has not worked against Trevor Lawrence.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in about 6 minutes, we'll get to one thing that teams have not been able to do well against Trevor Lawrence, despite maybe the overall numbers not looking good. There's one thing that they have done all right on offense there in Jacksonville. So we'll get back to that in just a second. But during the break, right before we went to break, there was an update on this bizarre story I'm sure you guys all saw yesterday. That is involving Mark Sanchez, the former Jets quarterback, Fox Sports commentator who was in Indianapolis on Friday because he was scheduled to be on the broadcast for Raiders and Colts. The news came out Saturday morning. At first, it was kind of presented as, hey, he was robbed, right? That was initially, I think, Adam Schefter said out this week, like, oh, an attempted robbery. Oh, my gosh.
And everyone's like, oh,
Mark Sanchez
that's
is
so
in the hospital. Like, oh, this is really, really scary stuff. Then more details came out, and we just got some more information as well at Indianapolis that, in fact, it's Mark Sanchez who, of course, has been charged with a couple of misdemeanors, but now got a little more serious for Mark Sanchez. The latest report, this was tweeted out by Tom Pelissero, but I guess there was a press conference in Indianapolis that they announced that the former NFL quarterback now also faces a level 5 felony battery charge, which carries a 1 to 6 year sentence. For those not familiar with exactly what happened, it's alleged that basically he was acting erratically, reeking of booze, slurring his words when he body slammed an elderly grease truck driver just before Sanchez was stabbed in the chest in Indianapolis. The 69-year-old driver said he stabbed Sanchez several times in self-defense after the attack, telling the cops, quote, "This guy is trying to kill me." This is according to court documents. Again, it's all alleged. But just a bizarre, crazy story that came out over the weekend.
Are we sure he's just drunk? Like, how drunk do you have to get to just start picking a fight in the cab of a truck of some random 69-year-old delivery driver? And the report said he was, like, running sprints. in the back of it?
Yeah, wind sprints in the alley of the Indy bar where the incident occurred.
Could you imagine if you were trying to defend yourself? First off, Mark Sanchez is in some very serious trouble. The fact that they updated the charges so that he could be charged with some felonies means he's going to need a much better lawyer than the one who would just handle the misdemeanor crimes that he was being accused of before. But, like, I just can't imagine, Gold, if all of a sudden you're fending off an attack in an alleyway and you're like, Mark Sanchez, don't! Why are you doing this? Why am I being assaulted by Mark Sanchez out of nowhere?
Celebrity or not, man, someone's overly intoxicated. Anybody's capable of being like, it doesn't matter. Like, I know what you're saying, but like, he's no different than anybody else. If he
I
got,
know. It would just be a very weird realization when you realized it was former sure. NFL and USC quarterback Mark Sanchez.
But I mean, like, in general, clearly, and who knows? Again, it's all alleged and everything. But yeah. And I don't know.
I mean,
obviously,
details. The injuries are very real because yeah. he was stabbed, and yes. I've seen the photos of the 69-year-old yes. delivery driver, and he was clearly injured.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what led to everything. It sure seems like from the outside that Mark Sanchez was extremely drunk, and obviously.
And the reporter wouldn't let the guy leave. He's just trying to, like, take over the situation. So yeah. weird. Like, I guess what part of this is, Gold, is like, what the hell is Mark Sanchez doing? Why is he just randomly drunk in Indianapolis?
Well, and that's, and that's where the stuff that we don't have information for. Like, who knows, right? I mean, more details come out, the stuff that none of us were privy to. Is this somebody that's had a problem with this before? Not in terms of, you know, getting in a fight, but
just having a consumption
who
issue.
Who knows, right? Like, I have no idea. Really, really bizarre story from the weekend happening in Drew's hometown of Indianapolis.
Yeah, I know.
Drew, are you familiar with this area, the bar that he was at and everything?
Yeah, at a Lockmiller's. Yeah, that's I
is that
know
a popular spot? Is that a good area of town and everything?
Yeah, it's a fine area. It's not, I haven't been there before. It's not, it's kind of away from the other
entertainment
pubs and okay. eateries, I guess, if you will. Like, it's still, it's on Washington Street, which connects to the Circle, but it's more on Meridian where you get to a lot of the bars and stuff.
Okay.
So this one's kind of a little bit more out of the way, but I know where this is at.
Terrible
yeah.
situation. I mean, he's got, I mean, not only for the gentleman, obviously, that this in his 60s,
no kidding.
But also, I mean, Mark Sanchez has a wife and kids, so it's just it's a terrible situation.
Do we know, I thought about it yesterday and I didn't look, do we know if, who they brought in to
yeah,
call,
Brady
to call
Quinn
the
was
game?
On, yeah, Brady Quinn was
Brady?
On the call.
Okay.
Yeah. So of the Raiders Colts blowout yesterday.
That's a weird combination of players.
You're doing
the Notre Dame,
and all of a sudden
the
you
Notre Dame USC part of that becomes kind of funny, I guess, in a weird way. I just can't imagine being the person responsible for the butt fumble and having a more embarrassing moment than that. Like, you're getting in fist fights with 69-year-old delivery drivers in an alley in Indianapolis for just no reason. And obviously the reason being allegedly that he was drunk and then intoxicated. And then these two people got into an altercation.
Like, do
but
we
I mean, they're not
guy,
charging the six, they're not charging the delivery driver right now.
Not that it would have
not
made,
yet.
Not that it would have excused any of this behavior by any means. But like, was this like was he just randomly go up to? Was this guy taunting him about the butt fumble 20 years later? Like, what's the?
It wouldn't matter.
But I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out what made or was he just so drunk that like anybody that was walking around that was who he was going to pick a fight with? I don't know. I mean, we've all seen drunk fights before at a bar. It's just this involves a celebrity. I have this one resulted in a stabbing.
I will say this was an old timer, as the text line was pointing out from the 913. This is an old timer in the. You probably did a little bit too much. My heart goes out. I hope that, you know, like, he's one of the nicest people I've ever met.
There were a lot of those.
Little early on the he's one of the nicest people I've ever met. As it turns out, he got into a very serious brawl with a near 70-year-old.
Yeah.
It's like, those tweets aged kind of poorly.
Yeah, people.
I mean, obviously hoping he's okay.
For sure. But I think you're right. The way it was presented initially from a lot of national folks was that he was robbed. Like, that was the initial reporting that Mark Sanchez was in a robbery, got stabbed. And you're thinking, oh my gosh. But yeah, I know it's still alleged, but it all sounds like no. Mark Sanchez was the individual here who actually instigated everything.
Last thing on this, very serious, obviously. I'm not trying to make light of this gentleman's probably very real fear that took place. There is part of me that wants to imagine it one way because it's much funnier. It's like a movie scene. If the entire time he's trying to reason with him saying his full name is in like, Mark Sanchez, please. Why are you doing this? Mark, this makes no sense. It's just my truck. Mark Sanchez, please. I just want to leave. I don't understand. And he just knows who he is the entire time. I don't think he does or did know.
Didn't at the time.
Probably does now.
Yeah.
That's got to be a weird thing to find out, too. You're sitting in the hospital and you're like, oh, by the way, we found out the person who assaulted you is former NFL quarterback Mark Sanchez. You're like, ooh, I don't quite remember the name. Remember the butt fumble? And he's like, oh, got it. Totally understand.
Just, yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know what the ultimate end result is, but now it's been there's at least one felony charge attached to this incident there in Indianapolis. Our Indianapolis insider, Drew Nixon, gave us the lowdown on all the location and everything.
Yeah, everybody was like slamming the city, you know?
No, but you know what? But to Cody's point about the early tweets, did you see, not to go down this road too much, but did you see like the governor sent out a tweet and all this stuff? Like people trying to get their name involved. Like it was kind of pathetic. Yeah, the governor and the mayor of the city were like already sending out tweets about the incident yesterday or 2 days ago. It was kind of a crazy scenario.
Someone says it was over parking.
I have no idea if they were arguing about park. I don't know if that's a joke or a real thing.
In the story, reportedly, Mark Sanchez was trying to tell the guy that he couldn't park his truck there. Why he was inserting himself into that situation? Okay. But that's what the story did. The affidavit said that the delivery driver said that he was telling him he couldn't park there, and he's like, "Okay, you know, like whatever."
All right, drunk guy.
Yeah. Like how the rest of us would respond in that situation. Cool, drunk guy. You know, I think I probably know where I can park my delivery truck. You know, whatever it was. But that reportedly was part of where they start fighting.
Jeez. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that if there's anything new. Yeah, it's probably going to be a long time.
I mean, he's not going to keep his job.
No, that's over. I mean, that's a hell of a 24-hour stretch. You got stabbed. You got arrested. You got charged with a felony, and you probably lost your broadcast career. That's a rough 24-hour span there.
Yeah.
Let's get back into the Chiefs, though. And you were doing some digging on how Trevor Lawrence handles the blitz in particular.
Well, I was trying to decide how the Chiefs need to attack this game like any other, right? When we make predictions, what's the best path for them to get in there? Look, the blitzes aren't going to work. That has been the absolute staple of the Chiefs defense so far this year. And I'm not saying it's at a 0%. And because, you know, sometimes Spags dials one up late in the game that still goes through gold. But the odds of the blitz working are significantly less. Trevor Lawrence has only been sacked 3 times this year. He's been sacked 0 times in half of their game. So he's been sacked twice and once in the other 2 games. He gets rid of the ball faster than just about anybody else in the NFL. So, like, he doesn't give you time to get to him or for the blitz to get to him unless you're going to get there in 2.57 seconds. Which the only quarterback getting rid of the ball faster than that is Aaron Rodgers, another not mobile quarterback. The only thing I'm trying to figure out is, does this actually, like, normally I would say this is how the Jags have success. Chiefs have to blitz. You definitely can't get there in 2.57 seconds with your defensive ends the way they're playing right now. Blitzes take longer to develop. How are you going to get there, right? But the other side of this is that the Chiefs are the number one efficiency team in deep ball defense this year in the NFL. And the Jags are the worst deep ball offense in the NFL. So maybe you don't have to get to Trevor Lawrence. And tonight's game is about one thing and one thing only. Tackling. Hitting a guy before he gets much further. They're not going to take a bunch of deep shots according to this. If they do, it's a bad sign for the Chiefs defense, I'll say. It's a bad sign for the game in general. But if it's just about keeping the guys in front of you, I actually think that's an okay thing for the Chiefs.
I just wonder, both teams, you know, tendency breakers and things like that. This is a tendency. The Chiefs are well aware of it. The Jags are, you know, able to self-scout a little bit. They understand how they're performing in this certain area. I'll be curious. This is where Spags is so great at adjusting. What's the initial plan out of the gate, opening drive, the Jags scripted plays, Spags and how, you know, kind of feeling things out a little bit and how they're approaching the game. And then what's the adjustment? You know, in week 1, everybody thought the Chargers were just going to run against the Chiefs. What did they do? All they did was pass the football. So the Jags, while the numbers are saying, hey, they don't take shots down the field. Tonight, maybe they do tonight. You know what I mean? Like, so what's that adjustment? Brian Thomas is off to a slow start.
And the Chiefs have been good against number one wide receivers.
Are they going to lock him down? Yeah, really. And he's not a number one. But yeah, Quinn Johnston is the...
Is he?
Ladd McConkey's the number one, even if the numbers don't show that so far this year. I don't think there's any dispute. Ladd McConkey is the number one receiver for the Chargers. Statistically, he's like the third
receiver. It's been Quentin Johnson this year, but yeah.
Anyway, but to your point, though, Cody, you know, what they did against A.J. Brown, what they were able to do against Malik Nabers, they have had success against the top-tier weapons. So who's the next guy that you would have to step up for Jacksonville? This is obviously where ETN has been so successful. They're tied in. Brenton Strange is someone that'll probably have a nice night tonight. Would not surprise me if you're looking at prop bets. I would take the over on his. I think that's an area where the Jags could have some success tonight.
I do think that there's something to that, but again, this feels like a good... We talk about this all the time. It's about matchups. This is a great matchup on paper for the Chiefs defense, even though Trevor Lawrence doesn't get sacked by anybody. So what does it matter if you don't get sacks? The Chiefs aren't a good sack team. They have to blitz to get pressure. Well, no one's getting pressure on him. He gets rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds. They don't allow for pressure to occur, which means they also don't have much of a deep passing game where the Chiefs' strength already exists. On paper, this appears to me to be a very good matchup for the way they play. So either what you're saying is going to happen. The Jags are going to be like, no, we got to change course. Time to get the ball down the field, and we're going to sit back a little bit. Or the Chiefs are going to have to get pressure hurried and with blitzes and, like, not delayed blitzes. Not the ones where, like, in the Lamar Jackson week where they had Nick Bolton sitting in the spy and he just kept going to apply pressure. But instead, somebody's kind of going immediately to see if whether or not they can snap him into it.
Yeah, the way Spags has been approaching so far this year, I mean, there'll be something that they haven't done in a while or all year that they'll catch the Jags off guard with. Like, I fully expect that. You mentioned the Nick Bolton situation. Like, there will be something else that they have. This is where I don't panic off of one drive. Let's say the Jags march right down the field on the opening drive. Anybody panicking after that, I think, hasn't watched enough over the last couple of years or paid enough attention. So it's the adjustment part of it. So first drive, if you're Jacksonville and your opening drive, you don't move the ball against the Chiefs defense, that's a problem, because that's the one time where you maybe have a chance to get. If you look when the Chiefs have been exposed defensively, other than the week one game where it was a mess all the way around, opening drives, Tim seems to move the ball against them. But usually as the game goes on, the Chiefs are able to settle in defensively. I fully expect that to be the case again tonight.
I think it's a good matchup on paper, despite the fact that Trevor Lawrence doesn't get sacked. The fact that he hasn't been sacked and he is still this bad, so far, statistically, he has been a bad quarterback, below average, like the 22nd best quarterback in the NFL, which is concerning, I would think, for their fans and for him in general. Other than Etienne and Brian Thomas, though, there aren't, like, some ton of threats. Tootin's been good, but the man only gets a handful of carries
explosive
a game,
back,
maybe
but
less.
Not on the field much, yeah.
Yeah, like, if you let up a dynamic run, I guess you could run into a little bit of trouble. But you're not going to do that pretty regularly. Right now, their leading wide receiver is Brenton Strange, as you pointed out. Travis Hunter is their third leading receiver. He only has 118 yards. They've been a pretty non-threatening one. This is always the thing that I like for Chiefs matchups, because they have not been a blowout team very much over the last 3 years. That's not been their staple. That's not how they win football games. Not even how I expect them to win the game tonight. But there's a clear pathway to that tonight, because there's a way in which the Jags just can't move the ball at all, and the Chiefs kind of get up on you a little bit. And then you're completely out of your game, because your best weapon, Etienne, is out of the game plan, and you do have to try to go downfield and find players downfield. They don't have a good selection of weapons because Travis Hunter hasn't developed into a star yet. That's really the difference.
Coming up in 12 minutes, we'll talk more about the Chiefs offense and what needs to happen this evening, and maybe a confirmation game, at least is what I would call it, for the Chiefs offense, for a lot of people to fully buy back in that regard. But let's talk a little baseball briefly. MLB postseason over the weekend. Again, I still think Friday night they should have started some of these AL and NLDS series when there was nothing else going on. To me, yes, it was a quadruple header on Saturday, but it was right in the middle of college football. Then yesterday you have games going on during NFL games. I just think Major League Baseball could have spotlighted itself a little bit better. I'll be quite honest. I didn't watch as much baseball this weekend as I would have if I would have had a game on a Friday night, like, just because of the college football aspect of it as well. But right now, here's where things stand. You've got one series with the Tigers and the Mariners tied at a game apiece. The Mariners got it done yesterday, their first home postseason win in like 24 years. You have Toronto.
That's crazy.
Toronto just spanking the Yankees. I mean, embarrassing. It's been fun to see. Yeah,
brought me some joy.
Putting up double-digit runs in each of the first two games. They have a 2-0 lead before the series shifts over to the Bronx.
Vladdy pimped the hell
grand slam
out of that grand slam yesterday.
The Dodgers are up 1-0 against Philly. They play 10. And then you have with the 1-0 lead on the Cubs. They also play this evening. So that's where things are at on the postseason side of things. You know, I think what was impressed about Seattle is they drop game one and you're like, oh no, you're in trouble. You got now Scooble to go up against. No, they go and get him for two runs yesterday, which against him is a big accomplishment.
Yeah,
it's a major win. And now they're even. Now, if you're that's one of those seasons, it's as tight as it can get, because if you're the Tigers, you're still glad you stole one while you were in Seattle. You're feeling like, dang it, we got one in game one and we had our ace on the mound, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and we lost the game that he pitched. So if you're the Tigers, you're probably a little bummed that you didn't take two, but both teams are probably feeling decent about where they sit with one game apiece.
That series feels like it's gearing up for a great one. Like, seven games, it's coming down to it. whose star shows up in game seven kind of series. That one's been the most fun of the postseason by far of any of them. The wild card round or this one, I've loved that series, and it's only two games in because it feels like it's got real juice back and forth. Teams are competing. I like it. And it's got like star power, right? Because Cal Raleigh is one of the biggest names this year. I've taken the most joy in watching Toronto kicking the teeth of the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
I understand they were in the World Series last year. I'm not trying to pretend that that's not an accomplishment in some ways. Not when you're the Yankees. The Yankees, my entire life and everyone's entire lives, Gold. I don't care if you were born in, you're my grandpa and you're born in 1930, or you're me and you're born in 84. It doesn't matter. Our entire lives conjoin together. The New York Yankees were the gold standard of Major League Baseball. That's what they were. They haven't won a World Series since 2009, 6 years before the last Royals World Series. Like, and I get it. Like, the Mariners are not the kind of team that, like, they've never won one, right? So they're in a different category. But then the Blue Jays just absolutely poured on you. To have, and this is the thing I've also liked about the postseason and just baseball in general. I think it was pointed out by one of the national media baseball guys. I like that rookies can matter, or like young players can matter in the MLB postseason right away. Kind of like we get in other sports. The guy going yesterday for the Blue Jays got drafted in 2024. And at one point was in the fourth inning against the Yankees with 10 strikeouts and no hits. Like, I like that they're just getting beat up and obliterated. That's brought me some joy. But also, like, I like when the series are close. So obviously the Tigers-Mariners one's been great. I'm looking forward to the two series tonight.
Yeah, the Brewers, to me, they are, because of past issues in the postseason, they just get overlooked. They were the best team in the majors all year. And the Brewers have had really good regular seasons before, and then they kind of crapped the bed in the postseason. Well, big one to get right away at home, and kind of, I think, kind of ease the nerves. The teams that had the layoff, you know, sometimes we get this rest debate, rest versus rust. The teams that had the layoff, like Toronto came out, they had the longer layoff. They looked amazing offensively away. No problem. Milwaukee came out in the first two innings and laid it on the Chicago Cubs in game one as well. So now that the series are kind of settled in and everybody had the day off, at least on the NL side yesterday, we'll see what happens tonight. The Dodgers and Phillies is that juggernaut type of series where you have potential for both teams to just go and put up some ridiculous numbers offensively. Toronto, what was impressed about them, and the reason why it was great to see their offense perform that way, they had the highest ERA of any team in the postseason entering. And so it didn't really matter. I mean, they got good pitching, but also it didn't matter when you're scoring 15 runs a game, 13 runs a game.
And sorry, the ALDS is five games, not seven. I'd said seven. But so when you look at...
Yeah, the divisional series are only
five.
Yep.
I'd take seven of that series, but that's what makes these series so interesting. Why the Yankees are done. Gold, they're done. That series is over. They looked lifeless to go in there. And that, you know, that part of it is always where they head next. The series tonight, what game interests you more of the two?
I mean, Dodgers-Phillies has more. Now, I'll be honest, though, the issue is...
I'm sick of watching the Dodgers. That's part of it. And the Chiefs, obviously.
The Chiefs are on, so I'm not watching. But the Phillies and Dodgers...
What would the score have to be for you to go split screen?
There is no score. When the Chiefs are on, I don't split screen Chiefs games.
Not even if it was 30-0?
I don't split screen Chiefs games. Yeah.
Okay, just curious. Yeah.
The only time I ever did that was last year when the Chiefs were playing the Saints on Monday night and the Royals had a divisional game against the Yankees.
Oh, that's different, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only time I split screen the Chiefs. Otherwise, it gets full screen treatment tonight.
It gets full screen no matter what.
Yeah. You can, by the way, check out...
I just like it
check
was
out,
fourth quarter. Check out. The game's 2-2 in the eighth.
You
Chiefs are up 30 to nothing.
Last week when they were up by 30 on the Ravens?
I was at the game in the press box. So
yeah,
I did split screen. Technically, I had it in front of me and my laptop. I did have a true split screen. No, but if you follow us on Instagram or Twitter tonight, they've handed me the keys to social media. So I will be doing videos at halftime.
You got to do one shirtless, all right?
We'll get to that. I was going to ignore.
There's not time. We'll get to that.
I was going to ignore it because I think you did it to troll now. And so I wanted to not give it any attention today on the show and just see your reaction and wonder why we didn't bring it up. But now it has to be addressed at some point. Anybody that followed Instagram on Saturday.
It's going
to
get crazier and crazier as
the
season
goes on.
The
fact that you did a shirtless running video from the station account just to promote something that you were going to do later on the day is wild in its own right. And I think we will talk about it later. We will get there.
Yeah. There's not time now.
But by the way, Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you could always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Up next, let's talk about the Chiefs offense. And I do think it is a confirmation game. I'll explain that next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.